It's fine. I admire the determination that got you here, but you need to eat. I slide my phone into my pocket and head toward the door. Come on. I'll buy you dinner.
Chapter 21. Kenna. DM does look like me. We have the same hair, the same eyes. She even has the same slender fingers I have. I was glad to see she got Scotty's laugh and smile. Watching the videos of her was like a refresher course in the history of Scotty. It's been so long, and I had no pictures of him in prison, so I was beginning to forget what he looked like. But I saw him and her, and I'm thankful for that. I'm grateful to know that when Patrick and Grace look at Diem, they can still see some semblance of their own son. I always worried that if she looked too much like me, they might not see remnants of him. I thought I'd feel different after finally seeing her. I was hoping there would be a sense of closure within me, but it's almost as if someone has stretched open the wound. I thought seeing her happy would make me happier, but in a way, it's made me even sadder, in a completely selfish way. It's not that difficult to love a child you gave birth to, even if you've never laid eyes on them. But it's extremely difficult to finally see what they look like and sound like and are like, and then be expected to just walk away from that. But that's exactly what they all expect me to do. It's what they want me to do. The thought of it makes my stomach feel like it's full of tight, knotted ropes, and they're all about to snap. Ledger was right. I needed food. But now that I'm sitting here with food, all I can do is think about the last couple of hours, and I don't know if I can eat. I'm nauseous, full of adrenaline, emotional, exhausted. Ledger went through a drive-thru and ordered us burgers. We're sitting in his truck in a parking lot of a park eating our food. I know why he didn't want to take me anywhere public. His being seen with me probably wouldn't go over well with DM's grandparents. Not that I know a whole lot of people in this town, but I knew enough people back then that there's a chance I could be recognized. If I haven't been already. I had a few coworkers back then, and even though I never met Ledger, I did meet a handful of Scotty's other friends. And since it's a small town, I could possibly be recognized by anyone who was nosy enough to pass around my mugshot. People love a good rumor, and if there's anything I'm good at, it's being fodder for gossip. I don't blame anyone but myself. Everything would be different if I wouldn't have panicked that night. But I did. And these are the consequences, and I've accepted that. I spent the first couple of years of my sentence replaying every decision I've ever made, wishing I could go back and get a second shot. Ivy once said to me, "Regret keeps you stuck on pause. So does prison. When you get out of here, make sure you hit play so you don't forget to move forward." I'm scared to move forward, though. What if the only way I can move forward is without DM?
"Can I ask you a question?"
Ledger says. I glance over at him, and he's already finished his food. I haven't even taken 3 bites of my burger. Ledger is good-looking, but not in the way Scotty was. Scotty was more the boy next door. Ledger isn't the boy next door. Ledger looks like the guy who might beat up the boy next door. He's rough around the edges, and the fact that he owns a bar doesn't soothe that image any. He doesn't come off quite the way he looks when he opens his mouth, though, and that's the most important thing.
"What happens if they won't let you meet her?"
he asks. I'm definitely not hungry now. Just the thought of it is nauseating. I shrug. I guess I'll move away. I don't want them to feel like I'm a threat. I force myself to eat a French fry, only because I don't know what else to say. Ledger takes a sip of his tea. The truck is quiet. It feels like there might be an apology hanging in the air between us, but I'm not sure who it belongs to. Ledger claims it when he shifts in his seat and says,
"I feel like I owe you an apology for stopping you from—"
"It's okay," I say, cutting him off. "You were doing what you thought you needed to do to protect Diem. As mad as I am for my own sake. I'm happy Diem has people in her life who protect her that fiercely." He's staring at me with his head slightly tilted. He processes my response, tucking it away somewhere without giving me any clue as to what he's thinking. He nudges his head toward my uneaten food.
You aren't hungry?
I think I'm too wound up to eat right now. I'll take it home. I put my burger back in the sack, along with the rest of my fries. I fold the sack up and set it on the seat between us. Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
I lean my head against the seat and study his face. Do you hate me? I'm surprised when the question leaves my mouth. But I need to know where his head is at. Sometimes, like when we were at his house, it feels like he hates me as much as Scotty's parents do. But then sometimes, like right now, he looks at me like he might empathize with my situation. I need to know who my enemies are, and I need to know if there's anyone on my team. If I only have enemies, what am I even still doing here? Ledger leans into his driver's side door, resting his elbow on the windowsill. He stares straight ahead and rubs his jaw.
I formed an opinion of you in my head after Scotty's death. All these years, it's like you've been some random person online. Someone I could make strong judgments about and place blame on without actually having to know. But now that we're face to face, I don't know that I want to say all the things to you I've always wanted to say.
But you still feel them. He shakes his head.
I don't know, Kenna.
He shifts in his seat so that his attention is more directed at me.
That first night you walked into my bar, I thought you were the most intriguing girl I'd ever met. But then when I saw you the next day in front of Patrick and Grace's house, I thought you were the most disgusting person I'd ever met.
His honesty fills my chest with embarrassment. And tonight? I ask quietly. He looks me in the eye.
Tonight? I'm starting to wonder if you're the saddest girl I've ever met.
I smile what is probably the most painful-looking smile, simply because I don't want to cry. All of the above. His smile is almost as painful.
I was afraid of that.
There's a question in his eyes. Lots of questions. So many questions, I have to look away from his face to avoid them. Ledger gathers his trash and gets out of the truck and walks it over to a trash can. He lingers outside his truck for a moment. When he reappears at the driver's side door, he doesn't get in. He just grips the top of the truck and stares at me.
What happens if you have to move away? What are your plans? Your next step?
I don't know, I say with a sigh. I haven't thought that far ahead. I've been too afraid to let go of the hope that they'll change their minds. That's starting to feel like the direction this is going, though. And Ledger, of all people, knows where their heads are at. Do you think they'll ever give me a chance? Ledger doesn't answer. He doesn't shake his head or nod. He just completely ignores the question and gets in his truck and backs out of the parking lot. Leaving me without an answer is still an answer. I think about this the entire way home. When do I cut my losses? When do I accept that maybe my life won't intersect with DM's? My throat is dry and my heart is empty when we pull back into the parking lot of my apartment unit. Ledger gets out of the truck and comes around to open my door. He just stands there, though. He looks like he wants to say something, the way he shuffles back and forth on his feet. He crosses his arms over his chest and looks down at the ground.
It wasn't a good look, you know. To his parents, to the judge, to everyone in that courtroom. You just seemed so...
He can't finish his sentence. I seemed so what? His eyes connect with mine.
Unremorseful.
That word knocks the breath out of me. How could anyone think I was unremorseful? I was absolutely devastated. I feel like I'm about to start crying again, and I've cried enough today. I just need out of his truck. I grab my bag and my to-go food, and Ledger steps aside so that I can exit his truck. When my feet are on the ground, I start walking because I'm trying to catch my breath, and I can't and don't know how to respond to what he just said. Is that why they refused to let me see my daughter? They think I didn't care? I can hear his footsteps following me, but it forces me to walk even faster until I'm up the stairs and inside my apartment. I set my stuff down on the counter, and Ledger is standing in the doorway to my apartment. I grip the edge of the counter next to the sink and process what he's just said. Then I face him with the distance of the room between us. Scotty was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. I wasn't unremorseful. I was too devastated to speak. My lawyers, they told me I needed to write an allocution statement, but I hadn't been able to sleep in weeks. I couldn't get a single word out on paper. My brain, it was... I press a hand to my chest. I was shattered, Ledger. You have to believe that. Too shattered to even defend myself or care what happened to my life. I wasn't unemotional. I was broken. And it happens again. The tears. I'm so sick of the fucking tears. I turn away from him because I'm sure he's sick of them too. I hear my door close. Did he leave? I spin around, but Ledger is standing inside my apartment. He's walking slowly toward me, and then he leans against the counter next to me. He folds his arms over his chest, crosses his legs at the ankles, and then just stares at the floor silently for a moment. I grab the napkin off the counter that I was using earlier. Ledger eyes me.
Who would it benefit?
He asks. I wait for more clarification, because I don't know what he's asking me.
It wouldn't benefit Patrick or Grace having to share custody of DM with you. It would bring a level of stress to their lives that I'm not sure they can emotionally handle. And DM, would it benefit her? Because right now she has no idea anyone is even missing from her life. She has two people she considers her parents already, and all of their family who love her. She also has me. And if you were allowed visitation, yes, it might mean something to her when she's older. But right now? And I'm not being hateful, Kenna. But you would change the peaceful existence they've worked so hard to build since Scotty died. The stress your presence would bring to Patrick and Grace would be felt by DM, no matter how hard they tried to hide it from her. So, who would your presence in DM's life benefit, besides yourself?
I can feel my chest tightening at his words. Not because I'm angry at him for saying them, but because I'm scared he's right. What if she's better off without me in her life? What if my presence would just be an intrusion? He knows Patrick and Grace better than anyone. And if he says my presence is going to change the good dynamic they've built, who am I to argue with that? I already feared everything he just said, but it feels painful and embarrassing hearing the words actually come from him. He's right, though. My presence here is selfish. He knows it. They know it. I'm not here to fill some void in my daughter's life. I'm here to fill a void in mine. I blink back tears and blow out a calming breath. I know I shouldn't have come back here. You're right. But I can't just up and leave. It took everything I had to get here. And now I'm stuck. I have nowhere to go and no money to get there because the grocery store is only part-time. The empathy has returned to his face, but he's quiet. If they don't want me here, I'll leave. It's just going to take time because I don't have the money, and every business in this town has turned me down because of my past. Ledger pushes off the counter. He clasps his hands behind his head and paces a few steps. I don't want him to think I'm asking for money. That would be the most mortifying result of this conversation. But if he offered me money, I'm not sure I'd turn it down. If they want me to leave badly enough to pay for my exit, I'll cut my fucking losses and go.
I can give you 8 hours on Friday and Saturday nights.
He looks like he regrets the offer as soon as it leaves his mouth.
It's just kitchen work, mostly dishes. But you have to stay in the back of the bar, No one can know you work there. If the Landrys find out I'm helping you...
I realize he's offering me this opportunity to get me out of town quicker. He's not doing me a favor. He's doing Patrick and Grace a favor. I try not to think about the whys, though. I won't tell anyone, I say quickly. I swear. The hesitant look on Ledger's face conveys his regret. It looks like he's about to say never mind. So I hurry up and spit out a thank you before he can backtrack. I get off work at 4 o'clock Friday and Saturday. I can be there by 4:30. He nods and then says,
come in through the back door. And if anyone asks, tell them your name is Nicole. That's what I'll tell the other employees.
Okay. He shakes his head like he's just made the biggest mistake of his life. And then he heads to the front door. He says,
good night.
But his voice is clipped when he says it. And he closes the door behind him. Ivy is rubbing against my ankles, so I bend down and pick her up. I bring her up to my chest and cuddle her. Ledger might have just offered me a job to get me out of town, but I sit down on my couch with a smile, because I got to see my daughter's face today. No matter how depressing the rest of the day was, I finally got a piece of something I've been praying 5 years for. I grab my notebook and write the most important letter I've ever written to Scotty. Dear Scotty, she looks like both of us, but she laughs like you. She's perfect in every way. I'm so sorry you never got to meet her. Love, Kenna.
Chapter 22. Ledger. Kenna is supposed to show up any minute. Roman has been off since the night I hired her, so I haven't had a chance to warn him. But I've been debating on changing my mind about hiring her since the second I made up my mind. Roman just arrived, and Kenna said she'd be here around 4:30, so now is probably a good time to bring it up to him so he's not blindsided. I'm slicing up limes and oranges to make sure we have enough garnishes for the night. Roman hasn't even made it behind the bar yet when I say, I fucked up. I meant to say, I hired Kenna, but I feel like they both have the same meaning. Roman eyes me suspiciously. I can't have this conversation while I'm slicing fruit, so I put the knife down before I hack off a finger. I hired Kenna. Part-time. But no one can know who she is. Call her Nicole in front of the other employees. I pick up the knife again because I'd rather look at the limes than at the expression Roman is giving me right now. Wow. Why? It's a long story. I hear his keys in his phone as he drops them on the bar and then scoots out a stool. Good thing we both work until midnight. Start talking. I walk to the edge of the bar and glance back into the kitchen to make sure we're still alone. No one else has arrived yet, so I give him a quick rundown of what happened in the grocery store parking lot, and how I showed her videos of Diem, and then took her for burgers, and somehow ended up feeling sorry for her, and offered her a job to help her get out of town. I get the whole story out, and the whole time, he's completely silent. I asked her to stay in the back, away from the customers, I say. I can't risk Grace or Patrick finding out she works here. I'm not worried about them showing up. They never come here. But I'd still like her to stay in the back. She can do the dishes and help Aaron. Roman laughs. So, you essentially hired a bar back who can back, but not bar? There's plenty to do back there to keep her busy. I hear Roman swipe his phone and his keys off the bar. Right before he disappears through the double doors to the kitchen, he says, I don't want to hear another word about the fucking cupcakes ever again. He's gone before I can point out that his being obsessed with the married baker down the street is a little different than my giving Kenna a job to get her out of town faster. The doors to the back swing open a couple of minutes later, and Roman says, Your new hire just arrived. When I make it to the kitchen, Kenna is standing by the alley door holding her tote, grabbing her wrist with the opposite hand. She looks nervous, but different. She's got lip gloss on or something. I don't know, but her mouth is all I can seem to focus on, so I clear my throat and look away from her and casually say, "Hey."
"Hi,"
she says. I point to a closet where the employees keep their stuff while on shift. "You can put your bag in there." I grab her an apron and keep it as professional as I can. "I'll give you a quick tour." She follows me quietly as I show her around the kitchen. I explain the process of how to stack the dishes once she washes them. I give her a brief tour of our stockroom. I show her where my office is. I take her out to the alley to show her which dumpster is ours. We're making our way back to the alley door when Aaron walks up. He pauses when he sees me standing in the alley with Kenna. "Aaron, this is Nicole. She'll be helping you out in the kitchen." Aaron narrows his eyes, looking Kenna up and down.
"Do I need help in the kitchen?" he asks, confused.
I look at Kenna. "We have a limited menu of food on the weekends, but Aaron takes care of all of it. Just be available if he needs the help." Kenna nods and reaches out a hand to Aaron.
"Nice to meet you," she says.
Aaron returns the handshake, but he's still eyeing me suspiciously. I look at her and point at the door, letting her know I want a minute with Aaron. Kenna nods and slips back inside. I give my focus to Aaron. "She'll only be here a few weeks at the most. She needed a favor." Aaron holds up a hand.
"Enough said, boss."
He squeezes my shoulder as he passes me and heads inside. I've shown Kenna everything I need to show her to keep her busy for one night, and she has Aaron now. He'll take care of her. I don't want to walk through the back and have to look at her again, so I make my way through the front door. Rozzy and Roman are covering most of tonight because I have to leave. I didn't take into consideration when I hired Kenna and told her to show up tonight that I already had plans and wouldn't even be here for most of her shift. "I'll be back around 9, I tell Roman. "I'm going to dinner with them after the recital." Roman nods.
"Marianne asks questions," he says. "She's been wanting us to hire her nephew as a barback. This isn't going to sit well with her."
"Just tell Marianne that Kenna is... Nicole is temporary. That's all she needs to know." Roman shakes his head.
"You didn't really think this one through, Ledger."
"I thought about it plenty."
"Maybe. But you thought about it with the wrong fucking head."
I ignore his observation and leave. Diem decided she wanted to try a dance class a few months ago. Grace says it's because her best friend takes dance, and it's not because Diem actually likes dance. After seeing her recital tonight, it's clear dancing isn't her passion. She was all over the place. I'm not even sure she's paid one second of attention in dance class, because while all the other kids were at least attempting the routine, Diem was running back and forth on the stage, recreating moves from her favorite movie, The Greatest Showman. The entire audience was laughing. Grace and Patrick were mortified, but were trying not to laugh. At one point, Grace leaned over and whispered,
"Make sure she never watches that movie again."
I was filming it, of course. The whole time I was filming Diem, I had this underlying sense of anticipation at the thought of showing Kenna. But DM's moments aren't mine to share. I need to remember that. No matter how good it felt on the side of the road to see Kenna finally get a glimpse of DM a few days ago. Patrick and Grace legally make all the decisions for DM, and rightfully so. If I found out someone close to me was sharing information about DM after clearly knowing I asked them not to, I'd be more than livid, and I'd immediately cut that person out of my life. I can't take that chance with Patrick and Grace. I'm already doing enough behind their backs by just giving Kenna this job. I don't think I want to take dance anymore,
DM says. She's still wearing her purple leotard, but there's queso dripping down the front of it now. I wipe it off her, because she's on the same side of the booth as me.
You can't quit dance yet, Grace says. We've already paid for 3 more months.
DM likes to try new things. I don't look at her willingness to quit all the things she tries as a negative personality trait. I think it's a strength that she wants to try every sport she can.
I want to do the thing with the swords,
DM says, swinging her fork back and forth in the air. Fencing? Patrick asks. They don't have fencing lessons in this town.
Ledger can teach me, DM says.
I don't have swords, and I don't have time. I already coach your T-ball team.
T-ball is hell, DM says.
I choke on my laugh.
Don't say that, Grace whispers.
That's what Roman said, DM retorts. I have to go to the bathroom.
The bathrooms are within view of our seats, so DM slides under the table and scoots out of the booth. Grace keeps a close eye on her as she walks to the bathroom door. It's a single-stall bathroom that DM can lock behind her, which is the only reason Grace isn't following her. Grace usually accompanies DM to the restroom, but DM has been demanding her independence lately. She makes Grace wait outside the bathroom now. And when we come to this restaurant, we always ask to be seated near the bathroom hallway, so Grace can allow DM the space to do things on her own while still keeping a close eye on her. When Patrick starts to speak, I can tell half of Grace's attention is still on the bathroom door. We filed a restraining order against DM's mother. I hold back my reaction, but it's hard. I swallow those words with a bite of food and then take a sip of water.
Why?
We want to be prepared for whatever she decides to do, Patrick says. But what would she try to do? I can tell by the way Grace cocks her head that maybe I shouldn't have said that. But would a judge even grant a restraining order, simply because it's filed? I figure it would take more than Kenna's presence for a restraining order to be approved. Grace says,
she chased us down in the grocery store parking lot. I don't feel safe, Ledger.
Oh, I forgot about that, yet somehow still feel the need to defend her like it was my fault we were all in that predicament in the first place. We spoke to Grady, Patrick says. He said he could have the judge expedite it, and she'll probably be served this week. I have so much I want to say, but now isn't the time to say it. I have no idea when the right time to say it is, or if I even need to say anything at all. I take another drink and don't respond to their news. I just sit silent, trying not to give off traitor vibes. Because that's exactly what I am right now. There's no way around it.
Let's change the subject,
Grace says, watching DM as she heads back to the table.
How's your mother, Ledger? I didn't even get to talk with her while she was in town.
Good. They're heading to Yellowstone, so they'll probably drop into town on their way back through. DM is climbing onto Grace's lap when Grace says,
I'd love to see her. Let's plan dinner for when they're here.
I'll let her know. Grace hands DM a French fry and says,
the date is coming up. How are you feeling?
I blink twice. I know she's not referring to anything related to Scotty, but I have no idea what she's talking about.
Leah?
Grace says.
The canceled wedding?
Oh, that. I shrug. I'm fine. She's fine. Things are better this way. Grace frowns a little bit. She always liked Leah, but I don't think she knew the real Leah very well. Not that Leah is a bad person. I wouldn't have proposed to her if I thought she was. She just wasn't good enough for DM. And if Grace knew that, she'd thank me for calling off the engagement, rather than continue to bring it up in hopes I change my mind.
How's the house coming along? Patrick asks.
Fine. I think I'm just a few months out from having it move-in ready.
When are you putting your current house up for sale?
The thought of that makes me sink an inch deeper into my seat. Putting it up for sale will feel like selling off a piece of myself, for so many reasons.
I don't know yet.
I don't want you to move, DM says. Those six words hit me right in the heart.
But you'll get to go stay with him at his new house,
Grace says, attempting to reassure her.
He won't be far.
I like the house he has now, DM says with a pout. I can walk there all by myself. DM is staring at her hands. I want to reach over and pull her out of Grace's lap and hug her and tell her I'll never leave her. But it would be a lie. I wish I would have waited just 6 months before deciding to build that house back when DM was younger. 6 months would have been plenty of time to know that the little girl Grace and Patrick were raising would infiltrate my life and my heart, as if I made her myself.
DM will be fine, Grace reassures me.
She must be deciphering the look on my face right now.
It's 20 minutes. Hardly anything will change.
I stare at DM, and she looks up at me, and I swear I can see tears in her eyes. But she closes them and curls into Grace before I can be sure.
Chapter 23. Kenna. I found out from the paperwork he left me to sign that Ledger is paying me way more than what the grocery store pays me. Because of that, and because it's just in my nature, I've been busting my ass all night. I've been reorganizing everything. No one said I needed to, but I wash dishes faster than they come back to me. So between bouts of dirty dishes, I've been reorganizing the shelves, the stockroom, all the dishes in the cabinets. I've had 5 years of practice. I didn't tell Ledger about my kitchen experience, because it's always awkward to talk about. But I worked in the kitchen when I was away. A couple dozen bar patrons is a walk in the park compared to hundreds of women. I wasn't sure how it would feel being stuck back here with Aaron at first, because he looks intimidating, with stocky shoulders and dark, expressive eyebrows. But he's a teddy bear. He said he's been working here since Ledger opened the doors several years ago. Aaron is a married father of four and works two jobs, maintenance at the high school during the week and kitchen duty on Fridays and Saturdays here. All his children are grown and out of the house now, but he says he keeps this job because he saves up his paychecks and he and his wife like to take an annual vacation to visit her family in Ecuador. He likes to dance while he works, so he keeps the speakers turned up and he yells when he talks, which is entertaining since he's usually talking about the other employees. He told me Marianne has been dating a guy for 7 years, and they're about to have a second child together, but she refuses to marry him because she hates his last name. He divulged that Roman is obsessed with a married woman who owns the bakery down the street, so he's constantly bringing cupcakes to work. He's just about to tell me all about the other bartender, Rosie, when someone walks through the kitchen doors and says, "Holy shit!" I spin around and find the waitress, Marianne, looking around the kitchen. "You did all this?" I nod. I didn't realize what a mess it was until now. Wow, Ledger will be impressed with his rash decision when he gets back. I didn't even know he was gone. I can't see up front, and none of the bartenders have been back to the kitchen at all. Marianne puts her hand on her stomach and walks to a refrigerator. She looks to be around 5 months along. She opens a Tupperware container and grabs a handful of grape tomatoes. She pops one in her mouth and says, "Tomatoes are all I crave. Marinara sauce, pizza, ketchup." She offers me one, but I shake my head. "Tomatoes give me heartburn, but I can't stop eating them." "Is this your first?" I ask her. "No, I have a 2-year-old boy. This one's also a boy. You have any kids?" I never know how to answer this question. It hasn't come up much since I was released from prison. But the few times it has, I usually say I do and then immediately change the subject. But I don't want anyone here to start asking questions. so I just shake my head and keep the focus on her. What are you naming him?
Not sure yet.
She eats another tomato and then puts the container back in the refrigerator.
What's your story?
She asks.
You new around here? You married? You seeing anyone? How old are you?
I have different answers for every question coming at me, so I nod, then shake my head, and I end up looking like my head is wobbling like a bobblehead doll by the time she stops firing questions at me. I just moved to town. I'm 26, single. She raises a brow.
Does Ledger know you're single?
I guess.
Huh,
she says.
Maybe that explains it.
Explains what? Marianne and Aaron exchange a look.
Why Ledger hired you? We've been wondering.
Why did he hire me? I'd like to know what she thinks is the reason.
I don't mean this to come off in a negative way, she says. But we've had the same employees for over 2 years now. He's never mentioned needing more help. So my theory is that he hired you to make Leah jealous.
Marianne?
Aaron says her name like it's a warning. She waves him off.
Ledger was supposed to get married this month. He acts like he's okay that the wedding was called off, but something has been bothering him lately. He's been acting weird. And then you apply for a job and he just hires you on the spot when we don't even need the help?
She shrugs.
Makes sense. You're gorgeous. He's heartbroken. I think he's filling a void.
It actually doesn't make sense at all. But I get the feeling Marianne is the curious type, and I don't want to say anything to make her even more curious about my presence here.
Ignore her,
Aaron says.
Marianne craves gossip as much as she craves tomatoes.
She laughs.
It's true. I like to talk shit. I don't mean anything by it. I'm just bored.
Why was his wedding called off? I ask her. Apparently, she's not the only curious one in this kitchen. She shrugs.
I don't know. Leah, his ex, told people they weren't compatible. Ledger doesn't talk about it. He's a hard egg to crack.
Roman peeks through the double doors, and his presence steals her attention.
The frat boys need you, Marianne.
She rolls her eyes and says,
Ugh, I hate college kids. They're terrible tippers.
Aaron suggests I take a break about 3 hours into my shift, so I decide to spend it sitting on the steps in the alley. I wasn't sure if I'd get a break, or what my hours would even be tonight, so I grabbed some chips and a bottled water before I left the grocery store earlier. It's quieter in the alley, but I can still hear the bass of the music. Marianne came back to chat again earlier, and she saw I had pieces of paper towel stuck in my ears to drown out the music while I worked. I lied and told her I get migraines easily, but I really just hate most music. Every song is a reminder of something bad in my life, so I'd rather hear no songs at all. She says she has a pair of headphones she can bring me tomorrow. So far, the music is the only part of this job I don't like. That was one good thing about prison. I rarely heard music. Roman opens the back door and seems momentarily surprised to find me sitting on the steps, but he walks over to the other side of the alley and flips a bucket upside down. He sits on it and stretches his legs out, putting pressure on his knee.
How was your first night?
He asks. Good. I've noticed Roman limps when he walks, and now he's stretching his leg like he's in pain. I don't know if it's a new injury, but I feel like if it is, he might need to take it easier than he has been tonight. He's a bartender. They never sit. Did you hurt your leg?
It's an old injury. It flares up with the weather.
He hikes up his pant leg and reveals a long scar on his knee.
Ouch! How'd that happen?
Roman leans back against the brick on the side of the building.
Pro football injury.
You played pro football too?
I played for a different team than Ledger did. I'd rather die than play for the Broncos.
He gestures toward his knee.
This happened about a year and a half in. Ended my football career.
Wow, I'm so sorry.
Hazard of the job.
How'd you end up working here with Ledger? He eyes me carefully.
I could ask the same of you.
Fair enough. I don't know how much Roman knows about my story, but Ledger did mention he's the only one here who knows who I am. I'm sure that means he knows everything. I don't want to talk about myself. Luckily, I don't have to, because the alley fills with light from Ledger's truck as he pulls into his usual parking spot. For whatever reason, Roman uses this moment to escape back inside and leave me out here alone. I tense with Roman's disappearance and Ledger's return. I'm embarrassed I'm sitting outside on the steps. As soon as Ledger opens the door of his truck, I say, I've been working, I swear. You just happened to pull up right when I took a break. Ledger smiles as he gets out of the truck, like my explanation is unnecessary. I don't know why I have a physical reaction to that smile, but it sends a swirl through my stomach. His presence always creates this hum right under my skin, like I'm buzzing with nervous energy. Maybe it's because he's my only link to my daughter. Maybe it's because I think about what happened between us in this alley every time I close my eyes at night. Maybe it's because he's my boss now, and I really don't want to lose this job. And here I am not doing anything, and I suddenly feel like a pathetic asshole. I liked it much better when he wasn't here. I was more relaxed.
How's it going tonight?
He leans against his truck like he's in no hurry to get inside. Good. Everyone's been nice. He raises an eyebrow like he doesn't buy that.
Even Marianne?
Well, she's been nice to me. She kind of talked a little shit about you, though. I'm smiling, so he knows I'm teasing. But she did imply he only hired me because he thinks I'm pretty, and he's trying to make his ex jealous. Who's Leah? Ledger's head falls back against his truck, and he groans.
Which one of them brought up Leah? Marianne?
I nod. She said you were supposed to get married this month. Ledger looks uncomfortable, but I'm not going to be the one to cut this conversation short on account of his discomfort. If he doesn't want to talk about it, he doesn't have to. But I want to know, so I wait expectantly for him to muster up an answer.
It was honestly so stupid when I look back on it,
he says.
The whole breakup. We got in an argument about kids we don't even have yet.
And that ended your engagement? He nods.
Yep.
What was the argument?
She asked me if I was going to love my future kids more than I love DM. And I said no, I would love them all the same.
That made her angry?
It bothered her how much time I spent with DM. She said when we started a family of our own one day, I'd have to spend less time focusing on DM and more time on our family. It was like an epiphany. I realized she didn't see DM fitting into our potential future family like I did. After that, I sort of just checked out, I guess.
I don't know why I expected their breakup to be over something more serious. People don't usually break up over hypothetical situations. But it says a lot about Ledger that he was able to see his own happiness as tied to DM's happiness, and he wouldn't settle for anyone who didn't respect that. Leah sounds like a terrible bitch. I'm half kidding when I say it, which is why Ledger laughs. But the more I think about it, the more irritated I get. Seriously, though, screw her for thinking DM isn't worthy of the same love as kids who don't even exist yet.
Exactly. Everyone thought I was crazy for breaking up with her, but to me it was a precursor to all the potential problems we'd be facing down the road.
He smiles at me.
Look at you being an overprotective mother. I don't feel so crazy now.
As soon as he says that, acknowledges me as DM's mother, my face falls. It was a simple sentence, but it meant everything to hear it come from him, even if it slipped out by accident. Ledger straightens up and then locks his truck.
I better get inside. The parking lot looked packed.
He never said what he left to go do for several hours tonight, but I have a feeling he was doing something with DM. But he could have also been on a date, which unnerves me almost as much. I'm not allowed to be in my own daughter's life, but whoever Ledger decides to date gets to be in her life. And that automatically makes me jealous of whatever girl that ends up being. At least it won't be Leah. Screw her. Roman brings a crate full of glasses to the back and sets them by the sink for me.
I'm heading out,
he says.
Ledger said he'd give you a ride home if you don't mind waiting. He's got about half an hour of shit left to do.
Thanks, I say to Roman. He takes off his apron and tosses it into a basket where all the other employee aprons have ended up for the night. Who cleans those? I don't know if that's supposed to be my job. I'm not even really sure what all my job entails. Ledger wasn't here to train me throughout the night, and everyone else kind of pointed out things here and there that I could do, so I've just been doing everything I can get my hands on.
There's a washer and dryer upstairs, Roman says.
There's another level to the bar? I haven't seen any stairs. He points at the door that leads out to the alley.
Access to the stairs is outside. Half of the space is storage. The other half is a studio apartment with a washer and dryer.
Do I need to take them up and wash them? He shakes his head.
I usually do that in the mornings. I live there.
He pulls his shirt off to toss it in the basket just as Ledger walks into the kitchen. Roman is shirtless now, changing into his street clothes, and Ledger is staring straight at me. I know it looks like I was staring at Roman as he was changing, but we were having an active conversation. I wasn't staring at him because he was momentarily shirtless. Not that it matters, but it embarrasses me, so I turn around and focus on the remaining dishes. Roman and Ledger have a conversation I can't hear, but I do hear it when Roman tells Ledger goodnight and leaves. Ledger disappears back into the front of the bar. I'm alone, but I prefer it that way. Ledger makes me more nervous than comfortable. I finish my work and wipe everything down for a final time. It's 12:30, and I have no idea how much longer Ledger has until he's finished. I don't want to bother him, but I'm too tired to walk home, so I wait for the ride. I grab my stuff and push myself onto the counter. I pull out my notebook and my pen. I don't know that I'll ever do anything with the letters I write to Scotty, but they're cathartic. Dear Scotty, Ledger is an asshole. We've clarified that. I mean, the guy turned a bookstore into a bar. What kind of monster would do that? But I'm beginning to think he has a sweet side, too. Maybe that's why you two were best friends.
What are you writing?
I slam my notebook shut at the sound of his voice. Ledger is removing his apron, eyeing me. I shove my notebook into my bag and mutter, "Nothing." He tilts his head, and his eyes fill with curiosity.
Do you like to write?
I nod.
Would you say you're more artistic or more scientific?
That's an odd question. I shrug. I don't know. Artistic, I guess? Why? Ledger grabs a clean glass and walks over to the sink. He fills it with water and then takes a sip.
DM has a wild imagination. I always wondered if she got that from you.
My heart fills with pride. I love when he reveals little tidbits about her. I also love knowing someone in her life appreciates her imagination. I had a vivid imagination when I was younger, but my mother stifled it. It wasn't until Ivy encouraged me to open that part of myself back up that I actually felt like someone supported it. Scotty would have. But I don't even think he knew I was artistic. He met me at a time when that part of me was still in a deep sleep. It's awake now, though. Thanks to Ivy. I write all the time. I write poems, I write letters to Scotty. I write book ideas I don't know that I'll ever get around to fleshing out. Writing might actually be what saved me from myself. I mostly just write letters. I regret saying it as soon as I say it, but Ledger doesn't react to that confession.
I know. Letters to Scotty.
He sets his glass of water on the table beside him and then folds his arms over his chest. How do you know I write him letters?
I saw one,
he says.
Don't worry. I didn't read it. I just saw one of the pages when I grabbed your bag out of your locker.
I wondered if he saw that stack of papers. I was worried he might have peeked, but if he says he didn't read them, for some reason I believe him.
How many letters have you written him?
Over 300. He shakes his head in disbelief, but then something makes him smile.
Scotty hated writing. He used to pay me to write his reports for him.
That makes me laugh, because I wrote a paper or two for him when we were together. It's weird talking with someone who knew Scotty in a lot of the same ways I knew him. I've honestly never experienced this before. It feels good, thinking about him in a way that makes me laugh instead of cry. I wish I knew more about Scotty outside of who he was with me.
DM might grow up to be a writer someday. She likes to make up words,
Ledger says.
If she doesn't know what something is called, she just invents a word for it.
Like what?
Solar lights,
he says.
The kind that line sidewalks. We don't know why, but she calls them patchels.
That makes me smile, but it also makes me ache with jealousy. I want to know her like he does. What else? My voice is quieter because I'm trying to hide the fact that it's shaking.
The other day she was riding her bike, and her feet kept slipping on the pedals. She said, "My feet won't stop flibbering." I asked her what flibbering meant, and she said it's when she wears flip-flops and her feet slip out of them. And she thinks soaking means very. She'll say, "I'm soaking tired," or "I'm soaking hungry."
It hurts too much to even laugh at that. I force a smile, but I think Ledger can sense that stories about a daughter I'm not allowed to know are ripping me in two. He stops smiling and then walks to the sink and washes the glass.
You ready?
I nod and hop off the table. On the drive home, he says,
"What are you going to do with the letters?"
"Nothing," I say immediately. "I just like writing them."
"What are the letters about?"
"Everything. Sometimes nothing." I look out my window so he can't read the truth on my face. But something in me makes me want to be honest with him. I want Ledger to trust me. I have a lot to prove. I'm thinking about compiling them and putting them into a book someday. That gives him pause.
Will it have a happy ending?
I'm still looking out the window when I say, "It'll be a book about my life, so I don't see how it could." Ledger keeps his eyes on the road when he asks,
"Do any of the letters talk about what happened the night Scotty died?"
I put space between his question and my answer. "Yes, one of them does."
"Can I read it?"
"No." Ledger's eyes meet mine briefly. Then he looks in front of him and flips on his blinker to turn onto my street. He pulls into a parking spot and leaves his truck running. I don't know if I should get out immediately, or if there's anything left to be said between us. I put my hand on the door handle. "Thank you for the job." Ledger taps the steering wheel with his thumb and nods.
"I'd say you earned it. The kitchen hasn't been that organized since I've owned the building, and you've only worked one shift."
His compliment feels good. I absorb it and then tell him goodnight. As much as I want to look back at him when I get out of his truck, I keep my focus ahead of me. I listen for him to back out, but he doesn't, which makes me think he watches me as I walk all the way up to my apartment. Once I'm inside, Ivy immediately runs up to me. I pick her up and leave the lights off as I walk to the window to peek out. Ledger is just sitting in his truck, staring up at my apartment. I immediately press my back against the wall next to the window. Finally, I hear his engine rev up as he backs out of the parking spot. "Ivy," I whisper, scratching her head. "What are we doing?"
Chapter 24. Ledger.
Ledger!
I glance up from packing the equipment, and I immediately start packing faster. The mom brigade is walking toward me. When they come at me in group formation like this, it's never good. There are four of them, and they have matching chairs with each of their children's names on the backs of them. They're either going to tell me I'm not playing their kids enough, or they're about to try to set me up with one of their single friends. I glance at the playground, and DM is still out there playing chase with two of her friends. Grace is keeping an eye on her. So I get the last helmet in the bag, but it's too late to pretend I didn't notice they were trying to get my attention. Whitney speaks first.
We heard Diem's mother showed back up.
I make brief eye contact with her, but try not to show any sort of surprise that they know Kenna is in town. None of them actually knew Kenna in the brief time she dated Scotty. None of these women even knew Scotty. But they know Diem, and they know me, and they know the story. So they think they're entitled to the truth. Where'd you hear that?
Grace's co-worker told my aunt, one of the mothers says. I can't believe she actually had the nerve to come back, Whitney says. Grady said Grace and Patrick filed a restraining order.
They did? I play dumb, because it's better than letting them know how much I know. They'll just ask more questions.
You didn't know? Whitney asks.
We talked about it. Wasn't sure if they went through with it.
I don't blame them, she says. What if she tries to take Diem?
She wouldn't do that, I say. I throw the bag in my truck and slam the tailgate shut.
I wouldn't put it past her, Whitney says. Addicts do crazy shit.
She isn't an addict. I say it too adamantly. Too quickly. I can see suspicion in Whitney's eyes. I wish Roman were at this game. He couldn't make it today, and he's usually my excuse to escape the mom brigade. Some of them are friends with Leah, so they don't flirt with me directly, out of respect for her. But Roman isn't off limits, so I usually leave him to the wolves when they show up. Tell Grady I said hello. I walk away from them and head toward Grace and Diem. I don't know how to defend Kenna in these kinds of situations. I don't know that I should, but it feels wrong allowing everyone to continue to think the worst of her. I didn't tell Kenna I was picking her up today, but I didn't know I was until I was on my way to the bar and realized it was almost time for her shift at the grocery store to end. I pull into the parking lot, and it's not even 2 whole minutes before she walks outside. She doesn't notice my truck. She walks toward the road, so I drive across the parking lot to intercept her. She sees my truck, and I swear she makes a face when I point to the passenger door. She mutters thanks when she opens the door, and then, "You don't have to give me rides. I'm fine walking." I just left the ball field. It was on my way. She sets her purse between us, and then pulls on her seatbelt.
Is she any good at T-ball?
Yeah. I don't think she likes the game as much as she likes hanging out with her friends, though. But if she stuck with it, I think she'd be pretty good.
What else does she do besides T-ball?
I can't blame Kenna for being curious. I've put myself in this position by already sharing too much with her, but now the moms have planted a seed in my head. What if she's only asking so she can get a handle on DM's schedule? The more she knows about Diem's activities, the easier it would be for her to show up and take her. I feel guilty even thinking that. But Diem is my number one priority in life, so I'd feel even shittier not feeling a little overprotective.
I'm sorry, Kenna says. I shouldn't ask you questions you don't feel comfortable answering. It's not my place.
She looks out her window as I pull onto the street. She does this thing where she flexes her fingers and then grips her thighs. Diem does the same thing with her fingers. It's incredible how two people who have never met can have so many of the same mannerisms. It's too loud in the truck, and I feel like I need to warn her, so I roll up my window as I pick up speed. They filed a restraining order against you. I see her look at me out of the corner of my eye.
Are you serious?
Yes. I wanted to give you a heads up before you got served papers.
Why would they do that?
I think what happened at the grocery store scared Grace. She shakes her head and looks back out her window. She doesn't say anything else until we pull up to the alley behind the bar. I feel like I've set her up for failure tonight by putting her in a bad mood as soon as she got in my truck. I shouldn't have told her about the restraining order right before her shift, but I feel like she has the right to know. She honestly hasn't done anything to deserve being served a restraining order, but the simple fact that she exists in the same town as Diem is reason enough for the Landrys to file one on her. She takes dance, I say, answering her earlier question about Diem. I put my truck in park and pull up the video from her recital. That's where I was last night. She had a recital. I hand Kenna the phone. She watches the first several seconds with a straight face, and then bursts into laughter. I hate that I love watching Kenna's face when she watches videos of Diem. It does something to me. Makes me feel something I probably shouldn't be feeling. But I like this feeling. It makes me wonder what it would be like getting to witness Kenna and Diem interact in real life. Kenna watches the video three times, with a huge smile on her face.
She's horrible.
It makes me laugh. There's a joy to her voice that isn't usually there, and I wonder if that joy would always be present if Diem were a part of Kenna's life.
Does she like dance? Kenna asks.
I shake my head. No. After the recital was over, she said she wanted to quit and do that thing with the swords.
Fencing?
She wants to try everything. All the time. But she never sticks to anything because she gets bored with it and thinks the next thing will be more interesting.
They say boredom is a sign of intelligence, Kenna says.
She's very smart. So that would make sense. Kenna smiles, but as she hands me back my phone, her smile falters. She opens the door and heads toward the back door, so I follow suit. I open the back door for her, and we're greeted by Aaron.
Hey, boss, he says. Hey, Nick.
Kenna walks over to him, and he lifts a hand. They high-five like they've known each other a lot longer than just one shift. Roman walks into the back holding a tray of empty bottles. He nods at me.
How'd it go?
No one cried and no one vomited, I say. That's what we consider a successful day in T-ball. Roman gets Kenna's attention.
She had gluten-free. I put three of them in the fridge for you.
Thank you, Kenna says.
It's the first hint of excitement I've ever seen come from her that had nothing to do with Diem. I have no idea what they're talking about. I was gone for a few hours last night, and it's like she developed personal relationships with everyone here. And why is Roman buying her three of whatever it is they're talking about? Why am I having a slight visceral reaction to the thought of Kenna and Roman becoming close? Would he hit on her? Would I even have a right to be jealous? When I got back to the bar last night, they were taking their break at the same time. Did Roman do that on purpose? Right when I have that thought, Marianne shows up for her shift. She hands Kenna a pair of what look like noise-canceling headphones. Kenna says,
You're a lifesaver.
I knew I had an extra pair at home, Marianne says.
She passes me and says, Hey, boss, before heading to the front. Kenna hangs the headphones around her neck and then ties her apron. The headphones aren't even attached to anything, and she doesn't have a phone. I'm confused about how she's going to listen to music with them.
What are those for? I ask her.
To drown out the music.
You don't want to hear music?
She faces the sink, but not before I see her expression falter.
I hate music.
She hates music? Is that even a thing? Why do you hate music?
She looks at me over her shoulder.
Because it's sad.
She covers her ears with the headphones and starts running water in the sink. Music is the one thing that grounds me. I couldn't imagine not being able to connect with it, but Kenna is right.
Most songs are about love or loss, two things that are probably incredibly difficult for her to absorb in any medium. I leave her to her duties and head to the front to start on mine. We haven't opened just yet, so the bar is empty. Marianne is unlocking the front door, so I pause next to Roman.
Three what?
He glances at me.
Huh?
You said you put three of something in the fridge for Kenna.
Nicole, he corrects, looking across the room at Marianne. And I was talking about cupcakes. Her landlord can't have gluten, and she's trying to stay on her good side.
Why?
I don't know. Something about her electric bill.
Roman side-eyes me and then walks away. I'm glad she's getting along with everyone, but there's also a small part of me that regrets leaving for most of my shift last night. I feel like they all got to know Kenna in a way I don't know Kenna. I don't know why that bothers me. I go to the jukebox to start up a few songs before the crowd arrives, and I analyze each song I choose. It's a digital jukebox with access to thousands of songs, but I realize it would take me all night to find even a handful that wouldn't remind Kenna of Scotty or Diem in some way. She's right. In the end, if there's nothing good going on in your life, almost every song becomes depressing, no matter what it's about. I put it on shuffle to match my mood.
Chapter 25. Kenna. I got a paycheck. It was small, and the way the paydays worked out, it was only for a partial week. But it was enough to finally get a new phone. I'm sitting on the picnic table outside my apartment browsing apps. I opened at the grocery store today, so I had several hours between that shift and my shift at the bar tonight. So I'm just passing time outside. I try to get as much vitamin D as I can, considering my outdoor time was scheduled and limited for 5 solid years. I should probably buy vitamin D supplements so my body can catch up. A car pulls into a parking spot, and I look up in time to see Lady Diana waving wildly at me from the front seat. We work different shifts most days, which is unfortunate. It would be nice to be able to ask her mother for a ride to and from work, but my hours are longer than Lady Diana's. Ledger has given me rides a handful of times, but I haven't seen him at all since he dropped me off at my apartment after my second shift last Saturday night. I've never met Lady Diana's mother. She looks to be a little older than me, maybe mid-30s. She smiles and follows Lady Diana across the grass until they reach me. Lady Diana gestures toward the phone in my hand.
She got a phone? Why can't I have a phone?
Her mother sits next to me. She's an adult, her mother says, glancing at me. Hi, I'm Adeline. I never know how to introduce myself. I'm Nicole at both of my jobs, but I introduced myself as Kenna to Lady Diana the first time, and also as Kenna to the landlord, Ruth. This is going to catch up to me eventually, so I somehow need to figure out a way to make the lie a truth. Kenna, I say, but I go by Nicole. That feels okay. It's kind of a lie, kind of the truth.
I got a new boyfriend at work today, Lady Diana says to me.